Let me introduce myself a little bit. I'm a trainer with Critical Path Training. Have been for a few years now. Working with SharePoint, both 23, a little bit, 27, quite a lot from Redis and SharePoint 2010 since early alpha versions. And I was lucky enough to also see some of the advancements in workflow that will be available in SharePoint 2010 that we'll be talking about today. A lot of different advancements inside workflow. Of course, you may have already seen some of that. You may have seen the fact that you can now run site-level workflows, right? So no more need to create hidden lists and have a workflow operate on a list item that people don't see, so it's actually available in the context of a site. And if you want to go ahead and kick it off, you basically add a hidden list item so it goes ahead and starts doing stuff, right? So that is exciting. You may have seen Visual Studio capabilities where you are now more able to create rich workflow forms using ASP.NET. So how many of you would consider themselves to be ASP.NET developers? That's most of you. And InfoPath, is that a technology that you typically use? A little bit less. So if you take a look at that, I'm also very passionate about ASP.NET. I have been since, well, SharePoint 27, basically, because it allows you to, well, create very nice workflow forms that are very integrated into the whole SharePoint product using stuff like people picker controls, right, and basically details like that. And InfoPath does have the people picker control. You can actually put it on your form, but always when you do, it kind of makes me laugh because it's the InfoPath people picker. It's not quite as integrated as you might want to do when you, well, build your stuff yourself. But today we're not going to be covering all of these advancements in how you build workflows using the tools that you can now, well, start to utilize. Instead, we're going to be focusing on something called external data exchange. And a very exciting, interesting topic that was not available in SharePoint 27. And this is also the main new feature in terms of workflow capability of the SharePoint platform. So in terms of workflow capabilities, having better Visual Studio tools is not going to bring you any new, well, immediate value in the fact that you cannot do anything new that you couldn't do in SharePoint 27, right? It's nice that you get a designer or a template for an association page, but hey, it's still an association page, right? So that's not really going to do anything new. Site-level workflows, okay. You could go ahead and work around that, but this external data exchange, that is definitely totally new, which was totally sealed in Office 27 and SharePoint 27. So just from my perception, and to get a little bit of a feel for the people that are in my class today, how many of you have developed workflows for the SharePoint platform? Quite a lot of you. So would you say that it is a difficult task to achieve? How many of you would say that? I would, personally. I'm a little bit honest here. I think SharePoint is very capable, but also in terms of doing workflow, it's not always as easy, right? For instance, list item caching. How many of you have seen the scenario where you basically do something with a list item, and then you read the data back again? Hey, it's the old value. It's not the stuff I just put in there, right? So basically what SharePoint does is all kinds of, well, features to benefit performance and scalability of the platform. So they do list item caching. And if you don't work with that caching behavior, well, you're going to get cached list items from one approach, and you will not from another approach. And if you combine it to worlds, well, basic stuff happens, right? And then you get all kinds of funky failures that you need to debug. And especially these types of race conditions are quite difficult to work through. But definitely a lot of exciting things. First of all, we are, of course, not going to cover all of that. We're going to cover external data exchange. And that's also going to mitigate some of the difficulties that you may have with SharePoint workflow and with workflow in general. So let's go ahead and first start to talk a little bit about this system called workflow, right? I think you heard this story many times before. Why is workflow nice? Well, I always see two things there. And the one thing that I see is that workflow is very nice because you have a visual design paradigm. That is also why ASP.NET is very nice. You get controls, you drag and drop them. And here you have basically that same notion, right? You can create activities, and then you can reuse those activities. You have a little bit of a visual thing going on. You even have a button saying, save this image to disk, so you can send it to your stakeholders, and they can look at it and say, well, this is exactly the flow as we have imagined that. So there's all kinds of benefits in doing that. And in terms of your visual capabilities, you may have already seen that you have some new things in SharePoint 2010 in terms of authoring declarative workflows, where you can take Visio as the design platform and then take that Visio into SharePoint Designer And in SharePoint Designer, you can basically pimp it out a bit and add some data, add some dynamicness to that whole world of workflow. Of course, it is basically still the world of two types of workflows, right? It's all running .NET 3.5. Just to note that, people may be expecting that you'll see some .NET 4.0. But no, SharePoint is not going to run .NET 4.0 right now. I don't know if a service pack is going to mitigate that, but I would not expect it because it's, of course, quite a lot of testing that you need to do if you're going to up your framework version, right? So it's all 3.5. Why? Well, release schedules didn't really match up. So if you take a look at what types of UIs you can create, it is basically two things, right? You have your sequentials and you have your state machines. And especially I like state machine workflow. How many of you develop state machines for SharePoint? And the rest of you, sequentials? So there's a lot of sequential work going on. I love state machines. Why do I do that? First of all, I think it's much nicer in terms of working with humans. And it allows me to basically model that a little bit better. Because typically you have a set of states, right? So in a sequential workflow, what do? You create a while loop with some type of, variable that is going to say, okay, now you're going to jump into this if branch or that or that or that. And that's, of course, basically your states. And at the end of the branches, you loop back into the top and you change your variable, so you jump into another branch, right? So people try and imitate state machines using sequential stuff. And then, well, quickly such a workflow becomes quite horrible to, well, step through. And you don't have a pretty picture for your stakeholders anymore, right? You say, here's the picture. And, of course, people are not really happy with that. So state machines, I love the fact that it allows you to really create a little bit of a sensible visual model. And, of course, you can dive into states, and you have some more concepts going on over there. But at the top-level view, your states are really clear and translate the message quite easily. So we still have the state machines and the sequentials to build. And also SharePoint Designer. How many of you have seen the Task Process Designer in SPD? Oh, almost none of you, seriously. We may have to take a small detour at the end of the session if I still have time left. So if you take a look at SharePoint Designer workflow, right, not always as powerful as you may have wanted it, especially in 27. Why? SharePoint Designer is, of course, about SharePoint. SharePoint is about people. SharePoint Designer creates sequential workflows, which is not about people. Mismatch. So that is, of course, why SharePoint Designer is not always the most capable platform of creating rich workflows that really model how you want to have a process, right? So now they have this new thing in SPD, and it is basically a sort of state machine stuff where you can create a task, and you can assign it to various groups at various stages, and you can do all kinds of rich things like say, hey, when 10 people approve or maximum of 5 people disapprove, then the whole set is disapproved, stuff like that. Typical things that would be difficult to achieve in normal SPD workflows. So definitely check out the Task Process Designer is what it's called. And that allows you to take a little bit of a state machine feel inside the sequential workflow. Of course, the first time I looked at that, it was like, hey, that's cool, state machine stuff. How did they build it? And of course, what do you do? Who loves Reflector? You gotta love Reflector, right? Come on, guys, we love Reflector. Have you all heard about the new Reflector? There's going to be a new Reflector. You do need to go ahead and shell out some cash for that. And it's going to allow you to step into DLLs where you don't have the source code for. Hey, isn't that nice, right? How many of you have been wondering, why is this not working, this call into SharePoint, and stuff happens? Now you can just press F11, step into it, and you can see exactly where it breaks and why. So that's going to be super amazing, right? So the same for that task process stuff in SPD. You take a look at it. And you notice that the task process stuff is actually a single activity of about, well, I don't know, a few thousand lines of code long because they need to model, well, state machine stuff in like a sequential activity, basically, right? So it's got to be a very complex activity just because of that. But definitely some nice investments over there. So first of all, we have that UI that makes us all very happy because we can print out pictures and we don't have to type code. I typically don't like writing code. I'm very passionate about programming. I'm not passionate about typing. I hate typing. Typing is very annoying and, well, time-consuming, and you make stupid mistakes, right? So now you debug, and you see a typo, and you say, typo. Edit and continue in SharePoint. Well, it doesn't quite work yet. So typing is not really that nice, right? So visual design is, of course, the way to go. The other side of workflow that is nice and why people love to do workflow, which I think is a very much more important notion, is persistence. So if you take a look at it, you have your UI design, fine, okay, we can go ahead and communicate that quite well, but I could use Visio to go ahead and draw up a sketch as well and translate that and communicate that. It's also not a problem. But typically, persistence is a very important aspect. Workflow is, of course, typically about long-running processes, and long-running means that if your server dies in the meantime, well, you would like the process to continue after you boot it back up, right? So you need to be able to persist the workflow into a database somewhere so it can be hydrated later on again once stuff happens. And whatever makes it hydrate again and will continue, well, that's, of course, up to the user to decide or on the developer to decide. So persistence is just a super important concept when you talk about workflow. And the main reason why that is so important, that is, of course, because we're human. And human are not quite computers yet. We may reach that in, I believe, some like 10 or 20 years where we have enough computing power to go ahead and take your brain and push it into a computer. Well, technically speaking, I don't know if we're actually going to be able to do that, but at least we have enough calculation capabilities in the CPU to, well, have the same type of, well, calculation capabilities as human brain, right? But humans are typically not very responsive. So what do you need to do? Well, you need to have your workflow idle until the human comes along and performs a task that they should have been doing. So, of course, that's going to be an interesting factor, right? Also, of course, if you take a look at all kinds of monitoring, you may have like a contract that you're monitoring, and then the lifetime of the contract is 6 years, so you want to have that workflow operate for that same, well, lifespan, basically. So that all is very important in terms of workflow. And first, I want to go ahead and show you how that all happens inside Workflow Foundation, how you can go ahead and make that workflow idle. Because if you take a look at what you need to do, there's, of course, the notion that your workflow must have a specific point in time where it's going to idle and it's going to do nothing. And how do you do that? Well, basically, your workflow, it is in memory, and it cannot just not do nothing. It needs to do something, right? It's busy. So now it needs to tell the workflow runtime and basically say, hey, runtime, I'm done working. I'm going to go ahead and you can make me pause. You can persist me. Of course, your workflow is not going to persist itself. It doesn't know about a database. It's a workflow. So the runtime needs to be able to persist you. But then you get into the interesting notion of, okay, if the workflow runtime is persisting it and the workflow is not there, how do you communicate back into the workflow that it needs to continue, right? So in order to do that, they basically have a system where a workflow can tell the runtime, hey, runtime, I'm done doing whatever I need to do. You can now persist me. And then the workflow is going to listen for a certain event to come in. And then it, of course, needs to hydrate that workflow so that the workflow can continue. Of course, the dehydration bit is not mandatory. But if you want to have any sort of, well, long-term capabilities and survive server reboots and stuff like that, you do need to have the persistence in there as well. But in my first demos, I will not have a persistent service, so idling just means, okay, I'm doing nothing, and then we're going to go ahead and signal that workflow to continue its work again, just to show you a little bit how that idling occurs. And if you take a look at extrapolating that into SharePoint, SharePoint would typically take that point in time to persist your workflow into a database to go ahead and, well, wait for events to happen. And you'll also see that in the code that you need to write later on if you want to operate with this all idling behavior. So let's go ahead and get into the first demo. So how many of you have created external data exchange services in workflow already? That's like one or two of you. Okay, that's cool. So what I have over here is basically a simple workflow, the voting service workflow, yeah. And it's basically, first of all, going to call a method on my system. And it's basically going to call that method, and then it's going to idle. And if you take a look at workflow, how can you recognize idling activities or activities that make your workflow idle? Very easy, they're green. So green typically means, I didn't tell you this. I've got a special slide clicker. It compiles. It's very cool. Actually, I found that out, that if you do it outside of PowerPoint, it compiles stuff, right? So it's actually not that bad. I need to show this anyway. So the green activities make you idle. So right now, of course, my workflow, I'm a human. I can take quite a bit of time to answer this message, this email, this task, this, well, whatever it is that you need to answer, right? I was actually planning on making you guys wait 5 minutes just to prove a point. So if you can all be silent now and just go ahead and wait for that for just a few moments. Okay. So, of course, idling, and then we go ahead and say continue, because it is debugging. It is not creating a non-debug build. So, of course, we do have the messages as well where you can say, hey, we see that the workflow completed and the proposal was rejected. And basically, it prints it out inside these activities over here. So if you take a look at how this is all built, how can you make the workflow idle on a certain concept so you can later on hydrate it again? They basically have the notion of external data exchange. So if you take a look at what that's all about, we have here, first of all, a class. Next, we have an interface. We have here, first of all, this interface. We have an internal interface iVoting service. And if you take a look at that interface, you see that it is marked with a special attribute called external data exchange. And that is basically a service that you can add into the workflow runtime that is going to, be hosted in the runtime. And, of course, if you talk to workflow and it's idling and workflow is persisted and it cannot really, get information about my yes or no key press, that yes or no key press is basically going to be sent into that external data exchange service, the thing that's going to implement this interface. And then that external data exchange service will typically first call into the workflow runtime and say, hey, I received an event for this and that workflow. Can you hydrate it for me, please, so that I can go ahead and call that event on the workflow itself? So first of all, of course, the runtime needs to know about all that system, so they basically added this attribute in there. So that is how you can go and communicate with it. So we have two events, proposal approved and rejected. And we have our method here that's basically going to go ahead and allows us to show the message box so we can go and start idling. Next, I have some data arguments where we go ahead and say, okay, this is the result of that idling. So this is going to contain my yes or no key press, so we can communicate that information back into the workflow using normal, event paradigms. It's just a normal .NET event, right? It's just a C# event, that's it, not really difficult. And there we have, of course, some communication. Know that it is serializable. And another thing to note here is that it doesn't contain the object sender, which you would typically, or it's not in the event args, right? But you don't use the sender because the sender is typically not a serializable class, and then you get some issues. So it's a special event in the fact that you send it without a sender. Sender is always null on that. So next I have my implementation of that external data exchange service, which I have over here, the iVoting service. And first of all, we have that create ballot method where we go ahead and specify an alias, ballot created for, whatever you want to create it for, like me or you or just a small string in there. And I'm going to show that dialog. So we're going to pop up the dialog, messagebox.show. And basically, after this call completes, the workflow is going to be idling and it's going to be waiting around for those events to come in, or at least one of the two. So basically, this is the place where basically my external data exchange service is saying, okay, I'm waiting around as well, but I'm in memory, so I can go ahead and handle the communication for you. And then we go ahead and say, if yes or if no, we fire one of the two events. And of course, we make the workflow wait on both events, and one of the events comes in, it continues, and it's done, basically, right? So in order to register all of that, you basically create your workflow runtime. So you instantiate the runtime. You instantiate a special service called the EDE service that's going to contain all your external data exchange interfaces and the classes that support all of that system. And next, we're going to start up the runtime and make it work. And then, of course, we have a very simple workflow that is just capable of waiting for an event. You see that I'm not doing any persistence. I'm not adding any SQL persistence services here or something like that. So idling means idling in memory. It's basically a sort of spin weight type of thing going on there. And later on, when I'm doing the same demo in SharePoint, we'll have the idling. I'll truly go to the database. So you can do IIS resets, and you can do all kinds of funky stuff to ensure that it is really going to the database and it's basically on pause, right? So let's continue with the slides. So if you take a look at this first capability, that's nice, right? So it's going to allow you to go ahead and make your workflow wait for stuff. And that is, I think, a very interesting notion, wait for stuff. There's many things that you might want to wait for. You might want to wait for something to happen in CRM. You might want to wait for somebody to push a button somewhere to indicate that, whatever. I have seen this document. I have reviewed this document. I don't know, whatever you want to wait for, you can implement that using, basically this paradigm of creating the interface, having a call, having an event back, and basically allow the workflow to wait on that. So what if you now want to go ahead and say, I want to wait for, this to happen. Well, and in the meantime, I want to actually wait for that other thing to also happen. One of the two. Or perhaps both. So if you take a look at waiting for two events, if you take a look at how an event is routed right now, let me go ahead and show you that for a second. In that simple demo that I just did, if you take a look at how the routing occurs, of course I closed down my my Visual Studio solution, sorry for that. So if you take a look at routing of these events back into the workflow, note that the workflow is of course typically persistent. So if you take a look at how you go ahead and route that information back into the workflow, what you're basically going to go ahead and need to do is you'll need to have the workflow ID. Did actually put that in here. Yeah, there's my workflow instance ID. And basically, it's going to go ahead and instantiate my arguments for a specific workflow instance. And typically, inside the workflow foundation workflow environment, which of course we're using in SharePoint, you have this workflow environment static class that contains the currently running workflow instance ID. So that is, of course, the GUID of that particular workflow. So later on, when you fire the event, you can fire that event at a particular workflow, right? But that also means that if you're only using the instance ID of a workflow to route that event into the workflow, you can only wait for, well, one event of that particular type of this particular interface, right? Because you just have one instance ID. Say that you want to be waiting for, well, basically one of the two buttons to be clicked at the same time, and you're going to route it by instance ID. How do you know, well, which one of the two you were waiting for and which one of the two basically was clicked, right? You don't know that. So in order to do a little bit more advanced type of, well, interaction with external systems, they have another model that's going to allow you to basically do this where you can say, I want to wait for X or I want to wait for Y. And how that is called is it's called a correlated or it's custom correlation for external data exchange services, where you will basically say, hey, runtime, first of all, can you hydrate this workflow for me based on that instance ID? And next I'm going to call into the workflow saying, hey, workflow, I received or I'm creating an event for you with this particular custom ID. So now inside your workflow, you can go ahead and wait for, well, custom ID 1 and custom ID 2 and 3 and 4. So you can wait for multiple events of the same type to occur. Typical example would be, say, SharePoint. You create two tasks for two people need to approve, and of course you want to wait until both have approved, right? So you have the same type of event, namely a task change event, and a task change event, you need to differentiate between the two. So how do you do that? Well, typically SharePoint allows you to generate GUIDs for that, right? And GUIDs are typically quite unique. Has anybody ever had a non-unique GUID? Would you recognize a non-unique GUID if you saw one? Hey, yeah. Right, that's just a little bit of silliness. So let's go ahead and go into the correlated service. I did have duplicate GUIDs, but usually because I copy-paste stuff, right? And then you change like a single number on your GUID. Come on, don't tell me that you don't do that. Change a single number on your GUID to make a new one. Here's the thing that I find particularly sad about GUIDs, right? You create a GUID. So here you have your GUID, right? It's been waiting, well, perhaps for the same amount of time as the universe exists, right? Because it's quite a unique number. And then what you do, instead of pressing copy, you first say new GUID and then copy, meaning that that one GUID has been waiting all its life. It's there, and then you don't use it. Oh, man, that's that is seriously messed up. Go ahead. You need to go ahead and take it from the perspective of the GUID. That's not nice, dude. Seriously. So let's go ahead and take a look at that correlation going on, right? So if you take a look at how you now communicate your event back into the workflow, you have your external data exchange event arguments. And of course, the workflow runtime doesn't really care about what particular activity inside your workflow is going to receive that event, right? So for the workflow runtime, instance ID, it knows what to hydrate and says, oh, do stuff for me. Go ahead and make it happen. But inside that workflow, you need to know which one of the activities you now need to continue executing with. So we need to have a custom ID in there. So that's basically my string ID being specified over here. So that is my custom correlation parameter, meaning that it needs to be unique for every time that you're going to go ahead and create a new task in this case. And next, you might also have some task data that you want to go ahead and communicate back into the workflow, some data about what happened with this particular task that you have created, right? So there's my first thing. Next, if you take a look at your task service interface, it becomes a little bit more complex because the workflow runtime does need to know a little bit of these notions. So what you need to do is you need to go ahead and take your interface definition, and you need to mark it, first of all, with correlation parameter, where you say, okay, there's this custom correlation thing going on, and do you need to know about it? Well, why do you need to know about it? Because that custom ID will, of course, need to be persisted somewhere in a database, right? Because if you go ahead and want to idle and you want to reset your server, you don't want to lose that custom ID. And since the workflow runtime doesn't know about your ID, your particular thing, how you correlate on a GUID, you on an int, you're on a combination of a string and a string, right? So there's all kinds of combinations that you can do. The workflow runtime doesn't care. So that's why they basically go ahead and need to know about all of that stuff, because what they do is they look at your interface, and when an event is being called, when you call a method that is correlated, the workflow runtime is going to extract basically that task ID parameter from, I cannot click it. Ah, oh, that's such a pain. Do you know it's the laser button? Would you expect the laser button to actually go ahead and send information to my laptop to do the lasering while the laser is coming out there? It's kind of insane, right? A little bit strange. But what I want to show you is that that correlation parameter task ID is exactly the same casing as your create task, the first parameter, right? So they match up that stuff. So now they see that method call, they can extract that task ID value from you, they know the workflow instance ID, and now they have a separate service called a workflow subscription service, and it's basically going to be called and said, hey, we have this method being called with these correlation parameters, and the instance ID is something I can figure out myself, but we need to store this task ID somewhere. So subscription service, go ahead and do that for me. And if you would have persistence and stuff like that going on, that would be important. And in this demo, I don't have that persistence yet, so it's not that important. But for SharePoint later on, of course, that's going to be huge, right? And SharePoint has a special implementation of that workflow subscription stuff going on. So we have our task ID parameter over here, where we can go ahead and specify our correlation. And later on, we also have the event, and the workflow also needs to, or the runtime needs to know about your event firing mechanisms. And there we say, hey, this parameter task ID, well, it's actually hidden inside e.id, which is, of course, the name of the ID field inside my event arguments class. Of course, if you don't name your event args e, then you might want to change e over here as well. I think that's a little bit of a silly issue, a little bit of a silly architecture going on, that they go ahead and hook it up to, well, field names, basically. But that's the way it is, right? So there you see, there's my ID property, the same casing exactly as going over here, e.id. They may have been able to think of something else. They may not have. It may have been necessary because of whatever architecture, I don't care about. So if you take a look at how you do that, well, basically, we're going to create a task. And, of course, since we want to create multiple tasks at the same time, we're going to do, in this case, a little bit of threading work, where we're going to go ahead and I can also move mouses without actually moving mouses. It's kind of nice. We do the queue user work item, where we can go ahead and start multiple of these tasks, right? You have a question?
Yeah. You say they match up the parameters by casing and whatever.
I don't know about VB.NET. Sorry. Good question. How does it work in VB.NET? Does it care about casing? Does it do a case-insensitive comparison? Something I'm not sure on. Haven't tested yet because, I don't develop VB. Actually, I do it from time to time a little bit. Office development, Visto, becomes a lot better when you do VB, right? Well, a little bit better at least. Up until C Sharp 4.0, then it doesn't matter anymore. Then actually, we win. It's been decided. C Sharp wins. So if you take a look at how you now go ahead and raise the event, you instantiate your task event arguments, and basically here's a correlation parameter being pushed into the external data exchange server so it knows about this particular task. We push that into our event arguments so that later on when we fire the event, we can fire it into this particular instance of the workflow, and we can go ahead and specify which task you were waiting on. And, of course, inside my workflow, what we'll now be doing is we'll have two tasks that we first of all create and then wait for the completion. So if you now take a look at these activities, there's actually something special going on in these activities. Because you now have custom correlation, you now, of course, need to configure that correlation inside your workflow as well, right? Because, well, you need to specify these task IDs. So for that, you have something called a correlation token. And that correlation token basically is going to contain all my correlatable parameters so that later on you can read them out again. And you can also configure your create task one to hook up to task completed one by virtue of using, first of all, that same correlation token over here. And if you use that same correlation token, now it knows basically about, these two different types of events and what activity to route that to. So if you go ahead and fire up the demo over here and see what happens, then, basically we have two text boxes, right? So here we have one, there's the other, and you can see the events coming in. So if you click OK on number two, then you see task two is done, click OK on number one. So basically it can wait for two events and continue when both are done. And in this case, we have created a parallel activity. So we're saying wait for both events to complete before you continue to the end. But if you would do something like a listen activity, you might want to wait for one of the two. You might want to also have a delay activity in there to also wait for a specific amount of time to do a little bit of time measurement, right? You need to complete a task before next Wednesday. So when next Wednesday arises, well, of course, your workflow needs to hydrate again and go ahead and send out emails and escalate and do stuff like that, right? So that is also a possibility, but it was not built inside this demo over here. Next, if you take a look at that custom correlation, we also have a bunch of special activities. If you take a look at how all of this works inside the basic demo, then you see that there are actually two activities that you can use to, call into these external data exchange services. So the first activity that you will be using for that is called the call external method activity. And you configure it based on the interface definition, right? So inside your workflow toolbox over here, there's your call external method. And in order to wait for an event to come in, you have handle external event configured for you. Actually, but if you also want to go ahead and configure the task ID as a normal property, then of course what you will need to have is you will need to have, basically a subclass of that where we can expose custom properties to go ahead and specify all those values, right? So that is why you would typically go ahead and implement subclasses on all of this. So here's my subclass of the calling part of this whole environment, where we can say, okay, I've got my create task, which derives from call external method activity. And in here, we basically add some properties to go ahead and store some metadata, store my task ID, my correlation value. And later on, in the old method invoking, we push it into the workflow, basically, or into the activity to go ahead and push it out into the external data exchange server. So subclassing is something that you do want to do. Subclassing is also important for other notions as well, because if you take a look at what it allows you to do, it allows you to take a bunch of code, push it into a single activity that you then have as a reusable component to use, first of all, in other workflows, but also when you need to redesign your current workflow. How many of you would typically add all code in the code behind? That is what I think that most people will start out doing until they notice that if you add like 10 or 20 activities that your code behind is really going to suck. And then you say, let's go ahead and do the component-based stuff, right, where you go ahead and create some specialist activities. And how many of you derive or create similar task activities as in SharePoint, create your own on-task created and on-task changed activities, stuff like that? That's what I would typically go ahead and implement that allows you to do that a little bit further, so I may be able to show you a little bit of that later on. So external data exchange, you basically have seen two things now. We have seen how you can go ahead and have a workflow idle until something happens using a simple interface definition, a class implementing that interface, and we have seen correlation in the fact that it allows you to wait for multiple events of the same type at the same time. And that is all the correlation does, right? So it's not really something super special. It's just, allowing you to do that. And, of course, important for many scenarios like waiting for two approval tasks to complete, something like that. So if you take a look at SharePoint workflow, you couldn't do this. That sucks. Yeah, it sucks quite a bit, actually. So if you take a look at SharePoint, it's, of course, a workflow platform since SharePoint 27, right? I was very much excited about seeing workflow basically arrive in SharePoint. Because earlier on, what could you do with some automation? You had some asynchronous event handlers that you could do in 23, right? A little bit funky hookup model, not the most pretty thing in the world, but it worked. And that's about it. So if you want to do any automation on SharePoint data, it was quite difficult to achieve, and now we do have that option in SharePoint workflow, of course. But if you then take a look at, what SharePoint is all about, SharePoint is, of course, a human platform. I would say state machine workflow platform, but of course many people do create sequentials. And if you take a look at then what you could do with that idling, which is of course a very important aspect of a workflow, you want to idle until, well, a task completes, right? That's a really simple one. You assign a task, you want to wait until it completes. But you also may want to go ahead and integrate your workflow a little bit beyond the world of SharePoint itself. I would say that typically SharePoint is used both as a data platform and also as a data servicing platform, where you basically allow a single portal to go ahead and form a ubiquitous place where people find information inside and outside of SharePoint. So you create your web parts and surface it over there. We now have the external list capability that allows us to do that more easily and work with all kinds of cool stuff in the context of SharePoint, so people don't have to search anymore, right? It's not 17 browsers that you have open, it's one. And that's, of course, going to be a bit of a benefit there. So in terms of what you can do with SharePoint workflow, and oh, did I leave that in there? Sorry. It's the EA SharePoint. Got to have EA SharePoint in there, right? But if you take a look at what you can wait on in SharePoint workflow 27, not a whole lot. SharePoint, basically. You can wait for SharePoint workflow to begin. You can get information about workflow modifications occurring, or somebody trying to modify your workflow, for instance, changing a task assignment, something like that. You can wait for task and list items. And that was basically it. And it didn't allow you to create the most flexible solutions, right? Because if you take a look at that notion of SharePoint being a platform, not just for SharePoint data, which this is really good at handling, but also as a platform where you might want to go ahead and create a task, and you create a task for somebody to perform something in CRM, or within whatever other system you want to have them work on, well, you cannot really wait for that task to complete inside CRM. So what do? How many of you have created hidden lists inside SharePoint? So if you want to wait for something to happen somewhere else outside of SharePoint, you create a hidden list, then you make your workflow wait on a list item that you create in there, but people don't see it. And then you create an external system, and that external system basically calls into the hidden list to modify that list item, just change the title or something. Now you get your event back again so you can continue the workflow, right? So people would typically push out hidden lists in between because there was no notion of waiting for whatever you feel like waiting for. And I think that is definitely an important aspect because we want to wait for, well, all kinds of different notions. Also in terms of correlation, how is this all correlated, right? Take a look at task as a great example of doing that. It is correlated on a task-by-task basis. You can create a task, you can wait for that task to complete. What you cannot do is create N number of tasks and wait for Y number of tasks to complete. It's going to be difficult to achieve that, right? Because that correlation isn't set up to do that. So what you can now do is, for instance, create your own EDE service, put it in SharePoint, and build out a behavior where you can say, I would like you to create 10 tasks, or perhaps 20. That number is to be decided at runtime. And then I want you to wait until 25% of those tasks have become completed, and if that is okay, send me the approved event. And if a maximum of 5 hard-coded numbers are saying it's disapproved, then fire me the disapproved event, right? Something like that. So really dynamic, something that is not really possible because of that correlation not allowing you to go ahead and reach those events. Well, you may be able to do that, but your workflow is going to get, of course, quite a bit more complex because especially that N number of tasks is going to be difficult to achieve. You will need some very advanced custom activities to do that. Basically, what the SharePoint designer team created when they built the task process stuff, right? They built all kinds of nifty advanced activities, but I would argue that that is not something that you would like to do. You would just like to wait for exactly that, well, what you're stating, 25% approvals or maximum of 5 disapprovals. Go ahead and wait for that, not for something else. Also going to allow you a certain level of flexibility in your workflow by changing that stuff around. So take a look at SharePoint services. That's the next thing I want to show you. How can we do this external data exchange in SharePoint? Because the big change for SharePoint 2010 is that where earlier on external data exchange was available, because SharePoint, of course, uses exactly the system for all the built-in stuff that you have, and this is the iSharePoint service, the iList service, the iModification service, and the iTask service, external data exchange interfaces. You can check them out inside .NET Reflector. You can see them all happening. They have also the implementations of that going on, and you can see all of those things just basically being there. But you couldn't add anything in there, right, in 27. They made all the classes sealed and internal and hid them away from sight. And now it's a little bit of a pain because I do want to create that rich type of task interaction, that interaction with external systems that you cannot achieve otherwise. So let's go ahead and check out how we can now, first of all, do that simple uncorrelated external data exchange service inside SharePoint itself. So for that, I have my next demo, SharePoint local service stuff. So one thing I keep on liking about 2010 is that I try and make every demo that I now have an F5 experience. So nice, right? First of all, it gives me some assurance that it will always work on your machines when you go ahead and download the demo from my blog. So that's kind of cool. And it's just cool. Come on. You want to have the F5 experience, right? There's going to be some nice announcements surrounding the F5 experience on the SharePoint blog this week. And I would advise you to take a look at that. There's going to be some new productivity capabilities inside Visual Studio when RTM hits. Not allowed to say what it exactly is because it first needs to be announced, but it's going to be an exciting thing to look at. Yeah, it's kind of like, yeah, it's going to be cool, right? SharePoint 14 is going to be cool. I'm not going to show it. It's going to be cool. Sure, it's going to be cool. Don't you make fun of me. It's totally cool, definitely. So here's my external data exchange, right? It's a very simple one. No correlation stuff going on, not necessary. My arguments class, also very empty and simple, serializable thing going on over there. Next, I have my workflow, and I basically do the same. I don't have a cool, well, message box.show method to go ahead and use that. You could try, but you're probably going to fail. And so what I do is I log stuff to the history list, right, so we can see the events occurring over there. And you also need to have a place where you can fire events into a workflow. So for that, I have a very nice page over here, and that is my local service event firing page. I like to use many characters just to go ahead and stretch my fingers a bit and ensure that characters are being used. It must really suck to be an X or Q. Now, Q might not be that bad because we have Qs in C#, right? But X might be. Anybody know a class with an X? Point? Point of X, right. Of course, I was like, point? There's no X in that. It always takes me a few seconds to go ahead and... External data exchange service. Hey, that's a good one, right. So here we have my drop-down list. I've got a fire event button, and basically what I'm doing in code over here is I'm going to go into the current site. It's a site-level workflow. I'm going to go into all the running workflows or all the workflows that have run, and I'm going to check out whether it's a workflow that I understand, basically my workflow over here, based on the ID of that workflow. It, of course, has got a template ID, right? So my ID is in here somewhere, so that's that one over here. And I'll have the same ID over here, so I can filter it down a little bit. I don't want to have any of the completed ones. I want to order it by the date, so I don't have to search that long. And next, I want to go ahead and add a list item that contains the workflow instance ID, so I can fire the event into that thing over there. You gotta love Link, right? Anybody who thinks that Link is only for databases, I use Link in just about any piece of code that I can find. And then I use as much Lambda expressions in Lambda, in Lambda, in Lambda, in Lambdas. Just to annoy people like the IT pro guys, right? You don't understand that. Now, that's my one issue with Link, right? It's very powerful, capable, but I would argue that it's also a little bit unreadable if you're not used to it. And if you have people that need to, well, maintain your code that are, well, not as proficient as you in developing, because that's not what they do all day, it's going to be more difficult for them to maintain it. So I'm a little bit, well, not sure about where you do and do not use it. Because I maintain my own code, I throw it in anywhere where I can, basically. So in my fire event, what do we do over here? We basically take that instance ID, but now we need to do something special because I talked about that idling behavior, right? So we have the SP workflow external data exchange service. My big issue with that class name is that it does not fit on slides. You need to figure out that people need to talk about your software, right? So don't make any too long class names that cannot be broken up sensibly. Because my slides start to be ugly. Oh, man, I so hate external data exchange. No, that's nonsense. But it is something that you notice when you're building out your slides, right? So first of all, why do you call this? Earlier on, we could just go ahead and have it all happening inside the external data exchange service itself. But you need to envision that that EDE, it's going to make the workflow idle. It's going to be persisted. So we need to have something to hydrate that, right? So in my earlier two demos, I created a host. The host, I did that. It's a console app. We created the runtime. We could make it idle. We could hydrate it, dehydrate it, do whatever. But now we're in SharePoint land, and of course we are not the host. We're, well, visiting the host, and we need to play nice with them. So what basically SharePoint did is they go ahead and persist it for me, but we do need to have a way to indicate to the workflow runtime that it now needs to be hydrated again so we can fire the event into it. So what does it do? Well, basically that. It goes ahead, goes into that workflow, goes into the runtime, it hydrates that workflow, and then it calls into your external data exchange service, and it says, hey, can you now go ahead and fire that event for me, please? So here we say, go ahead and hydrate. We do say that we want to communicate a particular type of interface with a particular piece of data, namely the instance ID, and this is the place where you can specify custom correlation parameters. But if you now go ahead into your local service, you can see that it is also a little bit different from what you just seen. These two methods are not used yet. I'll show you those in a bit. But earlier on, we would have a very simple model where inside that perform task, would actually go ahead and fire the event again. My perform task is not really doing anything. Well, I could add a log message or do whatever. I don't really care. But basically, we have this method here called call event handler. So what's that all about? Well, basically, when you call that workflow data exchange service.raise event, the workflow runtime is going to hydrate your workflow, and then it's going to call into your EDE saying, hey, I hydrated the workflow. Can you now fire the event? Well, basically, because you said so yourself a minute ago. So now you go ahead and you, of course, do that. This also means that the event firing and the event firing, or the notifying that the event needs to be fired, and the firing itself, what we do over here, is inside separate classes typically. So you might have like a WCF service where CRM can call into and say, hey, this happened. And inside that service over there, you're going to say raise event. And then we're going to go over here and we're going to actually call into the workflow itself to go ahead and do stuff again because something happened in CRM, right? So there's a little bit of an extra layer of abstraction going on between all of that. So you basically check out, is this my interface? Is it the event I understand? Is there actually somebody listening to the event? And what we can then do is take that workflow instance ID to fire the event again. So exactly the same as you've just seen, only this time we're doing it inside SharePoint. So let's go ahead and check out if I have my debug URL correctly set up. And we can now go ahead and hit deploy on that. Oh, wait, I actually want to go ahead and hook up the debugger for you so you can see what's happening over there. Oh, wait, this is interesting. I recreated my site and then it's missing some lists, so you need to reconfigure the workflow itself. It is currently performing auto association, right, which you can do. So it basically has your history and task list set up for you. And it stores the GUID of those lists. So if you recreate your site, then it's kind of a little bit of a pain. And now we can go ahead and hit deploy again. Do you know the big pain is that sometimes when I go ahead and say reconfigure, it's going to say, hey, this is not a site-level workflow, it's a list-level workflow. No. It was a site-level workflow, so you can please do site-level things, then it's all quite messed up. So this one is clearly deployed successfully. Haha, see, that's an easy fix, right? Didn't even have to code for that. So we can open up SharePoint and start taking a look at what's going on over there. SharePoint developers are well-rested people. Yeah, there we go. It has parsed and it has compiled stuff for me. That is amazing. So let me go ahead and say debug attached to process W3WP. Let's go ahead and be sure to take them all. So I can add some breakpoint a litch for you guys. So let's go over here. Let's go over there. So those are the important ones. So let's go ahead and start a workflow. So of course, this is going to hit the debugger, right? So first of all, it's going to hit perform task. Basically, the workflow runtime now knows about all this correlation stuff going on. So there we go. The workflow is running. We can go into site workflows. And there you see my running workflow. It's in progress. And you can see that it's waiting for that local service event to come along and fire into there. And we can actually go ahead and... Hey, my keyboard is not... Oh, wait, I'm in the wrong location. Sorry. Let's go ahead and remove that stuff, because I need to go into another site workflow and start another one of those. There we go. And what I'll next want to do is go into my local service event page, where, of course, now I have two of these workflows running. We can go into the status page of the overall status page, basically. So let's go over here, where we can see I have two of those running. And here we can now pick one of the two. The one that I started first is going to be this one, and we can fire the event into that. So you can see that we're going into the page itself, where we're going to go ahead and extract the instance ID. What I'm then going to do is call raise event, where the workflow is going to be hydrated, and that's going to dive into your call event handler, where we basically check all the stuff out, take your instance ID, and fire it into the workflow itself. So if you now take a check out your workflow, you can see that it is, of course, completed. And this one still is too. I need to refresh that and fire another event and basically do the same thing again for the other workflow. And then this page would actually go ahead and be empty again. So you can see that we can now wait for, well, something. In this case, for a page where somebody comes along and says, okay, this has happened. And you can already envision all kinds of scenarios where this is useful. It's not really an external system, right? But take, for instance, that you have SharePoint, you have order pickers, and you basically have a manual task where you say you need to do this. Somebody needs to go into the browser and say, click, I've done it. Right? So that's already implemented using something like this, this type of an approach, right? So, of course, we also have the notion of correlation where we want to go ahead and make use of. So for that, I, of course, have another small demo to talk about. So the next thing is, of course, what can you correlate on? I've talked about most of this, right? So you may want to go ahead and wait for a little bit of a different task waiting behavior, like wait for n number of tasks to complete, wait for a daily thing to occur, all kinds of behaviors that you want to go ahead and do. We have seen that external data exchange interface going on, how you model all of that. One thing that I haven't shown you yet is how can you go ahead and register all of this, and how is it being persisted? How do you work with that? Well, the persistence I've just shown you, only the registration I skipped over, so let me go ahead and show you that registration going on. So for that, what you need to do is you need to create a web application level feature, because typically these services need to be added into the workflow runtime, right? Using add service call, just a simple instantiation of a class and pushing it in there. But how do you do it inside the SharePoint workflow, because you don't have access to the host, right? So workflows operate at the web app level. That is where the host is operating. So if you take a look, what you can then do is you can go into the configuration file, c:inetpub.wwwss virtual directories 80web.config. And if you open up a web.config file, you'll notice that it now has a new section under safe controls where we have our workflow services, right? So if you take a look at how do you register it, then two ways to do that, basically. You can use the SP web config modification class. Who loves that one? How many of you had tons of issues with that one? How many of you had that was deployed, and then a day later your config is back to being undeployed? It's like, oh man, I had that so many times. It was just painful. I hope that is fixed in SharePoint 2010. Haven't seen any fixes for that yet. So basically, inside the event receiver over here, what we do, we're going to create a web config modification where we say it's going to be going in this node over here, and we're going to create a workflow service. We have our assembly name and class name, and basically that's it, right? And then SharePoint reads it all out and pushes it into the environment, and it's done with it. So not really that difficult to do. So just a little bit of web config modification stuff to work with. So then the next story comes along is, let's go ahead and show you how to do custom correlation, right? And that's going to be a little bit more difficult to go ahead and achieve, because if you take a look at custom correlation, it's all about also storing that custom correlation parameter. So if you want to wait for two tasks to complete, you need to differentiate between them. So for that, you had a correlation parameters where you could specify two different IDs. Now you have a little bit of differentiation going on. But earlier in my first correlation demo, you didn't persist it, right? So if I would go ahead and close down the console app and start it back up again, it would all be lost, and that's, of course, not really sensible for any server-based system. So I would argue also not for client-based systems. So for that, you actually need to go ahead and persist your correlation parameters. And now we get into a little bit of a difficulty on how to do that. Why is all of that difficult? Well, basically, first of all your correlation data, SharePoint or Workflow Foundation has got a special service called the Workflow Subscription Service. And that Workflow Subscription Service is basically taking all the correlation parameters and it's pushing it out into whatever system you implement. You typically need to implement a Workflow Subscription Service yourself. So if you go ahead and take a look at Workflow Subscription. Workflow Subscription Service, is it in here? Of course, it's not in here. Let me see what debugging. Oh, this is Visual Studio debugging. Sorry about that. We need to go into SharePoint libraries. There we go. Now we can say Workflow Subscription Service. Workflow Subscription Service. There you have it. It takes a while to find stuff, but then you do have it. So I'm still happy. There we go. And we have the SharePoint SPWinOE subscription service. And this is a super rocket science-y thing, right? It's going to be amazingly advanced. So let's go ahead and you can decompile it now. There we go. We have some code. And basically, if you take a look at how that subscription service works, it has, first of all, a create subscription method where you get information about your correlation parameters. And this is the place where you typically throw it in SQL Server. But basically, SharePoint doesn't know about your external data exchange services and all the different EDEs that somebody can push out from different clients, from different suppliers. And, you know, it's just a little bit more difficult if you're not in control of the host, right? You're building the EDE, but the host is somebody else. So what they basically do is they look up your EDE service, and then they tell your EDE, oh, you do it. That's it. So you are responsible for persisting your own correlation parameters. And that's, of course, going to be a little bit of a difficulty. Where do you store it? Well, a few things where you can store correlation parameters. In memory, sensible, right? Reboot it, stuff happens, so let's not do that. Next option would be SharePoint list. It's quite viable. Only downside is that the SharePoint list is maintained at the site collection level and below, and workflow EDEs are operating at the web app level, so you might need to create multiple lists based on the site collection where your workflow operates. That's, of course, an issue, or not an issue, but it's an implementation thing that you need to do. Next, you have custom database, which I think would be preferred for, a little bit of the more advanced systems, right? You might have a little bit more control over that. And also transactional behavior, stuff like that. That's, of course, something that is missing quite a bit. And you may think about SP persisted objects, storing it at the web app level, but you do need to envision that workflow is executing under a particular security account, and SP persisted objects, they get persisted into the configuration database. And if you take a look at your typical web app accounts, they are not allowed to write into the configuration database, right? Unless, okay, you can confess now, who runs everything as admin? I hope nobody, right? SharePoint makes it quite easy to do it in 27, quite easy. You did need to modify some COM permissions and stuff like that. But to do least privilege installs, it's not really that difficult to do. So I'm glad that nobody is confessing right now. In 2010, it's even easier. It actually works out of the box. It's kind of cool. So what I've implemented here is the same notion, firing pages. And next, I have my correlated service. And if you take a look at what happens is we have, of course, that create subscription that you now need to implement. If you don't have custom correlation, you don't implement this at all. It's not necessary because you only have the instance ID of the workflow, and we already know where that is, namely in your content database. So now you need to do something custom. So how do you go about doing that? Well, first of all, I'm creating a list in this case, a simple list. It's not transactional. I would argue that it may not really work correctly in advanced high-load scenarios, but for this, it's good enough for me, right? But I'm just pushing it out into a list. And inside my list, what I'm basically going to go ahead and do is I'm going to add a bunch of columns. I'm going to add, let's not go ahead and do that. I think that crashes. Let's go ahead and add the workflow ID and my custom correlation parameters columns in there so we can persist it and later on do IS resets and have it continue. So next in my create subscription, you're going to get all the correlation properties inside your subscription message. There you have all your correlation data. You can take your custom ID property, and next I'm using link to SharePoint to basically push out a new subscription. So this is basically my list item where I have both a subscription ID, a workflow ID, and a custom ID. Workflow ID, custom ID, that is for routing purposes. That's for hydrating your workflow and knowing what activity inside that workflow that a message needs to go to. And next you have a subscription ID that you also need to manage. Three IDs, oh my God. But the third one is basically used because in SharePoint, what may happen, what if somebody cancels the workflow, right? You don't want to be left around with a subscription that is no longer necessary. So basically, the workflow runtime, as soon as something goes out of scope, it's going to say, hey, this correlation stuff is no longer necessary. And they don't do that by passing in the same correlation parameters, workflow ID and customer ID. They pass in the delete stuff, they pass the subscription ID for you. Because otherwise, you need to have some form of object array params type of method. And now at least you have a single ID value. So basically, we look that thing up again and basically going to say, delete it. And there you go. And then, of course, it's quite gone. So... well, that's basically this demo, so let's go ahead and fire it up. That's also about the last demo I'll be able to show you. I do have a little bit more full-fledged demo going on as well, where this is all, there's no external system, right? It's all inside SharePoint. So what's it all external about? Well, nothing. This is a local-only external data exchange service. See, that's a good name for a slide. Local-only external data exchange service. Now, of course, this is something that you could call into CRM from inside your EDE service or do whatever. And I do also have a demo. I'll push it out on my blog where I do have a separate ASP.NET website where I maintain some data basically in memory. And next I have WCF endpoints to communicate with that true external service. And I actually implemented a dual HTTP binding to communicate between my EDE and my true external system using a stateful connection, which is, of course, also notably not very production safe because if your stateful connection dies down, it doesn't build it back up again, you know, stuff like that. But it's kind of a nice demo to have a true external system so you can see data appearing inside a website. And if you now click a button in the website, your workflow continues again. So it's a little bit more of an advanced demo that way. So let's go into my site workflows. There I have my custom correlation service. There we go. And let's go into site workflows, and we can see it's in progress. So I'm going to fire up another one. So we have two of those. And next, I'll go into two different pages. First of all, I go into the site workflow page and into one of these two later on. And next, I also have back again my event firing page. Of course, that may be external, internal, doesn't really matter. And of course, you have a little bit of added UI in here right now, because you need to pick which one of the two events you want to fire. So for one of these workflows, I'll just pick one of them. I'm on a fire event number 2. Let's go ahead and fire that one in there. There we go. And if you now take that second one, you can actually... Is it posting back already? Come on. Every time I do the demo, it actually is nice, and event 2 disappears as well from the box over here. Oh, it doesn't. Well, we can actually see the event arriving if you open up the correlated service over here. So here we see event 1 received. Did I fire event 2 just now? I may have created a bug somewhere. There's supposed to be a bug somewhere, right? Well, here it is. No, don't know exactly what happened with that one. It's still in progress, right? So let's go ahead and fire some more events in there, and then we can have the workflow continue on that and do some logging and do stuff like that. Visual Studio is waiting. So this is actually an exception where you say, oh, he's got an exception. Ah, you're such a lame speaker. You've got an exception. This is actually an expected exception because sometimes events cannot be delivered to the workflow because of whatever reason. So if you take a look at how this is implemented, you get an event delivery failed exception, right? And you're all like, oh, man, event delivery failed exceptions, that is so horrible. But if you would go ahead and decompile that subscription service, you can take a look at the fact that they catch that workflow subscription service. If you go into the Microsoft one, I believe it was the Microsoft one. Yeah, I think it is. SP Workflow, that is the wrong class, right? SP Workflow, SP WinOE, that's the name. SP WinOE subscription service, there you go. And inside, I believe the create subscription method. I'm not 100% on that. But basically, there is code in here. I could go ahead and find it for you where they do the catch of that exact exception without any handling of that. And then later on, they just fire the event again to see if it now arrives. So it's not like a big issue if you see that exception coming along from time to time. That just happens. See, there it goes. See, now it's actually going to be gone. So again, that same exception going on again, not a big issue. But if you take a look at your workflow, you can actually see that the workflow lighted quite a bit. So here's my custom correlation service workflow. And it doesn't say, you failed, it's horrible and it's painful. And it actually completed quite well. Because if the event doesn't arrive the first time, you get an event delivery failed exception. And then later on, they just try it again. And then it, of course, arrives again. So that allows you to do, well, basically, well, all kinds of interesting exchange of information with external systems while allowing your workflow to wait on that. I think I'm a little bit past my end time here. So I'm going to go ahead and not show you my full demo on having a true external system where you have basically a separate website with WCF endpoints. If you want to have that demo, go ahead and send me an email, come up to me, I'll copy it down for you. I hope I've been able to, well, give you a little bit of background information why this whole new prospect of workflow is important for us developers, especially developers of workflows, of course, because it allows us to wait for events to happen, all kinds of events, events happening in CRM, inside your point-of-sale systems, inside your LOB systems, inside SharePoint itself using richer semantics than it's available out of the box. For instance, that task correlation stuff going on where you can now correlate on, well, an N number of tasks being completed, for instance. So all kinds of valuable things can come out of that. So thanks for your attention. Hope it was an informative session for you guys. Do fill out your eval forms. They are very important to us and to the event organizers as well. It allows us to go ahead and gives a little bit of insight into how you guys are enjoying yourself. Are you guys enjoying yourself?
Yeah,
I would say so. Well, I'm too. Got some more nice workflow demos for you, so please feel free to come up to me. I'll be at the Ask the Experts booth. Thanks for your attention. I hope to see you again. Thank you.